Your ability to make a split-second decision could be powered by dopamine, according to researchers. Scientists studying the behavior of mice found that the brain chemically significantly affects your chances of making a snap movement or decision. They're simply saying, are you in control of your mind? Scientists are discovering the power of dopamine to change your decisions. Another amazing story. In a moment, we're going to talk about mind power. It's called Gotcha, the subordination of free will. Eldon Taylor back with us on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. Eldon Taylor, the award-winning New York Times bestselling author, more than 300 books now in audio and video programs, host of the popular syndicated radio show Provocative Enlightenment. Eldon has earned his doctoral degrees in both clinical and pastoral psychology and is a fellow in the American Psychotherapy Association. He's also a certified master chaplain as well and a favorite guest here on Coast to Coast. We welcome back Eldon Taylor. Eldon, good to have you back.
Oh, well, thank you, George. It's been a long time. I've missed you, sir.
Yeah, me too. And gosh, I loved it when we talked about subliminal programming and messages. That was a great program.
Well, thank you. I think my favorite was the one that we did on Thanksgiving Eve. No, or Thanksgiving Day. It was actually Thanksgiving, and it was on gratitude. Do you remember that one?
Yep, I sure do. I sure do. Yeah,
that was, I think that was my favorite. But I always have fun on your show. You know that I'm a regular follower. I'm one of your fans. I subscribe. It's the way I get the shows because the only time I stay up this long is if we're going to do a live show, you and I.
That's true. Where are you now? What coast are you on?
I'm in Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm on the Pacific Coast, but I'll tell you what. I don't think it is a coast because we're over here in the quarter of Montana and Idaho, and we have had winter.
Oh, my gosh.
Heard just yesterday that we are now the number one city of over 100,000 people in the nation for snowfall this year.
Wow.
That ought to make you feel good. I mean, it's snowing out there right now.
Yeah, I've missed the winter in St. Louis. I'm in L.A. right now. And in St. Louis, they've had 70-degree weather for most of the winter. It's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. That is a fact.
So tell me.
I don't know. You know, go ahead.
You're pretty prolific, but this time you've got one out called Gotcha. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, what I did, and you know this, I have spent now over 30 years studying why people do what they do. And along the process of looking at all of the psychological aspects, you sooner or later see how that weaves into how our own psychology is used against us. And, you know, we typically think, well, marketing people use it against us, and boy, do they ever. You know, they use functional magnetic resonance imaging today instead of the old scientific marketing where mm-hmm. we use a blood pressure cuff or a galvanic skin response measurement. And using fMRI will watch the brain lifetime while we stimulate it with products, visual imageries, etc. We learn things like if you show a smoker the Surgeon General's warning on a pack of cigarettes, it excites the reward center in the brain, which gives rise to causing the smoker to want to smoke more.
Wow.
Well, if you begin to plumb the mind using what we think of today as a kind of neuromarketing, you get pretty sophisticated on the kind of presentations that you want to use. Well, as I look at that, you know, I begin then to see, well, it isn't just marketing people that are taking advantage of all these nuances to how we process information and how they can tweak us in ways that get us to do what they want us to do because we think, one, it's our idea, and two, it's a great idea. But then I began to look at how that information can be used, has been used for that matter, by government agencies. And, well, as I put it together, I ended up with over 120,000 words, you know, aimed at trying to show people this is what you need to be aware of in order to avoid just being another lemming out there following along, doing what you're doing without having any awareness of why you're doing it. You know, it's really kind of elementary, but you can sit someone, I could sit someone down at my desk and give them a survey. And the survey would be designed to determine, are they liberal or conservative? If I set a jar of hand sanitizer on the desk in front of them, it will skew their answers to the conservative side. In fact, I can bring them in, have them answer it without that jar, bring them back a week later, ask them to answer the same survey with that jar, and when I see that the answers have been skewed, suggest to them that it was the jar of hand sanitizer that may have impacted them, and they'll deny that. Oh, no, you know, I was just kind of thinking, I hadn't ever thought of, and they'll rationalize it away. We take five automobiles, brand new cars, five different colors, and we put a beautiful woman, scantily clad, draped over one, in a bikini with high heels.
They don't even remember the car, do they?
We ask them, which car is the fastest? And they'll invariably choose the one with the woman on.
That's right.
We bring them back a week later, five different cars. But they, I mean, they're five different colors, but they're the same car.
Yeah.
And we put her on a different car, and again, they'll choose the one that she's on.
Yeah.
Now, when we point that out, once again, they'll rationalize why they did that, why they made that choice. But the fact of the matter is, in this latter instance, there is a level of excitation, arousal that comes from this woman paired with a car. And that, we know, gives rise to identifying the vehicle as it must be faster because I'm aroused by it. But that's an unconscious process, a subconscious process. We're not thinking about it. It's something that we're not, you know, we're actually not reasoning. With a jar of hand sanitizer, what does that suggest to you? Well, it's a subliminal suggestion that is essentially saying, watch out, danger, germs, disease. And that leads you to thinking more conservatively than you might have thought otherwise. You know, I heard you in the warm-up as you were coming in and talking about some of the ways that we are manipulated. And the bottom line is there is no question but what governments with agendas, if you will, planks in a platform or the platform itself, as well as merchandisers, have spent billions of dollars to learn how to plumb the depths of our unconscious. And when you think about it, George, you know, we think today about the brain as basically system one and system two.
Mm-hmm.
System one is the automatic system. It's the system that makes about 90% of our decisions. We can watch the nucleus accumbens in the brain, getting the information for all intent and purposes to the conscious mind. And system two, that part of the brain where we actually really think through a decision, a choice, where we consider its ramifications, et cetera, and so forth. What ought to really concern the listening audience is this. We know, using functional magnetic resonance imaging, that if I give you a problem, and it has a choice in it. And so you in one hand have a, say in your right hand you have a button that acknowledges a true or a false or a yes or a no or an A or a B. And in your left hand you have the alternative. A technician watching your brain make a decision will know what you're going to decide 6 seconds before you do. 6 seconds on average, they'll know what you're going to decide before you know what you're going to do. Which tells us that the conscious mind is but a 20/20 hindsight on the subconscious. In fact, that gives rise to the whole question of what's free will. And, you know, there are many, many scholars out there today that refer to free will as the grand illusion.
Is there anything wrong with marketers or anybody tapping into the brain with these techniques and some of the things you've just mentioned? I think it's brilliant if they can make it work.
Here's what you've got. You've got a double-edged sword. You've got the surgeon's scalpels, you know. You could use this probably for some great good. You could also use this for your own private agenda. And that may be all right with some, and it may not be. We've come to understand that we think, I'm going to digress for a second, we think of the five higher order personality traits, something that we refer to as OCEAN, an acronym for openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. Now, you're familiar with demographics. Everybody's familiar with demographics. But what if we were to take these demographics and say our target audience is we want females between the ages of 20 and 40? If we really want the right female, we need to know more about them than just their age or their income or the area they live in. What we'd really like to know is what makes them tick. What are their personality traits? So then we take surveys. Now, you're probably aware of this, but Cambridge Analytics did exactly that for Trump in his campaign. They used a whole set of psychometric scores and a metadata, compiled that data, and essentially told the Trump campaign what to do, when to do it, where to do it, how to label things, etc. In other words, if we know that this person tends to be liberal, but they're also religious, we have a better chance to address them with an issue that is important to them than if we don't know anything about those personality traits. So you can look at this, and some people will say, oh, that's horrific. You mean they actually manipulated an election this way? And other people will say, well, that's just good marketing. I mean, how's that different than President Obama using his elite team of social psychologists to script every word that was used by his canvassers, whether door-to-door or on the phone?
Well, that's...
So you tell me, George, is it good or is it bad?
You know, it depends, I guess, on how it's being used and for what purpose.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. It absolutely does. And unfortunately, I think, you know, in our society, it's used for somebody else's gain. And your only defense is to understand what the tools and techniques are, so you're alert to those and you begin to become proactive about the information in that biocomputer that is just responding at a subliminal level, if you will, without a conscious sentry to stop you.
In Gotcha, which is 27 chapters, you point out a lot of these, but there's a great quote from our dear friend, the late Edward R. Murrow, and he said, a nation of sheep will beget a government of wolves. Isn't that what's happening to us right now?
I believe so. I believe absolutely that's what's going on. You know, we've got people that are not thinking anymore at all. There's an old philosophy of divide and conquer, and I have never seen the country as divided as it is today. And it amazes me some of the things that I hear friends of mine say that I know are false to fact. But I heard that exact thing said on one of the networks. And it's as though our reasoning is based on the soundbite that we take out of the media or off of Facebook. And this whole notion of fake news, where Trump overplays that, it's nevertheless very real. So, you know, we hear immediately that the bust of Martin Luther King was removed from the White House, and there are still people that are running around believing that. You know, there's a wonderful older book written by Neil Postman. You probably have read it, Amusing Ourselves to Death.
Mm-hmm.
And Postman in this book talks about the media and the power entertainment has. There was a TV series called West Wing, and we heard Barack Obama say, hey, if I could write this, this would have been perfect for, you know, the kind of a story I'd want to tell. We later learned that the writers were indeed writers for the White House. Now, what happens when you tune into media that is entertainment, and the entertainment delivers information to you that is slanted, is you go away and believe it. So there's still a whole lot of people that think the former governor of Alaska could see Russia from her kitchen and said so. Well, you know, that was a Saturday Night Live skit. It never happened, but you still hear it quoted. I think you and I have talked about this one before, but it's, I think, a perfect example. I was watching two networks, because that's kind of what I do now. One was a liberal network, the other one a conservative network, on the same morning, and they were having the same poll. But the polls were positioned differently. On one network, we heard, should poor taxpayers be forced to pay for rich kids to go to private school? On the other network, we heard, should poor taxpayers be forced to pay or forced to work two jobs in order to pay for private school since our public school system is failing? Now, if I happen to be liberal, I'm going to listen to that network that said, no, you know, poor taxpayers, you should not ought to be forced to pay for rich people.
Right.
And if I am to be conservative, I'm going to listen to the other side of the argument. Because the nature of the beast is I want to hear that which affirms what I already believe. I don't want to hear that I might be wrong. So then I'm going to take that soundbite and I'm going to go to the water fountain at work, and I'm going to argue against school vouchers, because both these surveys were about school vouchers. What we don't see people do is Google school vouchers or go to their library. Where does the money come from? Who uses the money? How does it impact public education, et cetera, and so forth? Instead, we simply take that soundbite, and that becomes our pivot point for everything forward related to that subject. And that gives rise to our inability to even communicate with people on the other side of whatever the argument is.
I've got to tell you, you have had a pretty good understanding, I think, of the human mindset. A very good one. And let's come back in just a moment. Eldon, we'll talk more about your work. Gotcha. Eldon's website is his name, eldontaylor.com, and we will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Eldon Taylor with us, of course. We'll get to your calls next hour as we talk about his latest work, Gotcha, Manipulating the Mind. That's basically what it is. Who started this, Eldon? A long time ago, somebody had to come up with the thought, let's start manipulating people.
Well, you know, I suppose if you look at propaganda, and that's how we think about it, it's much more sophisticated than that word suggests today. We have to go to Edward Bernays.
There he is.
Sigmund Freud's nephew. And he looked at the work of Freud, his uncle, and he said, you know, holy cow, if I could just utilize how this unconscious works, we could get people to do what we want them to do, and they would do it because they wanted, you know, it was their choice. So he set about, you know, developing what today we call propaganda. And initially it was scientific marketing, and that was the old blood pressure cuff or pneumo belt devices, biofeedback devices, very similar to a polygraph. And, you know, where product placement was concerned or ideas were concerned. He was quite the innovator. If you go to your local school and you ask that local school teacher who invented the light bulb, they'll no doubt tell you it was Thomas Edison. But the fact of the matter is that was one of Bernays' major feats. He held the Golden Lights Jubilee, and he did not want to acknowledge White, the true inventor from the United Kingdom. It was better if we had an American inventor. His job was to promote electric light bulbs. So Thomas Edison got the nod as the inventor of the light bulb. And that's hung, that's stuck. To this day, yeah. Most people believe it was Edison that did it. You know, he did a marvelous job with getting women to smoke cigarettes. That was another one of his major, you know, companies that he worked for. So he staged during a woman's protest, a freedom movement, and he had a number of models light up cigarettes, and that was their protest of freedom.
Well, most people, Elle, didn't think that Henry Ford was the inventor of the automobile. Not true. It was Carl Benz, the Mercedes guy.
That's exactly right. There's another fellow by the name of White who wrote a textbook that any scholar of history who has looked at this textbook said it is a perfect model of how not to write history. He invented such things as the Columbus sailed to America. At the time, he believed the Earth was flat, so Spain didn't want to finance this.
We still have some flat earthers.
Most people believe the story that Columbus thought the Earth was flat. There's no such thing. You know, everybody knew the Earth was round. The Greeks measured the radius of the Earth so accurately way back B.C. time.
Yeah, with their primitive equipment, if anything.
That's correct. You know,
they probably use strings.
Using geometry. That's exactly right. So it is one of those myths that has stuck around because somebody said it was so, and instead of investigating that, we just accepted it. You know, all but for Galileo, we might still think that, objects...
The sun revolves around us.
That's correct. That's correct.
Well, let me ask you several things that you've been working on. You have, in your history, you have looked at the human mind and what it's capable of doing.
Right.
Now, years ago, we were one of the first to broadcast stories about privacy invasion. And we said on this very show that smart televisions will one day be accessed by hackers, whomever, and they will be able to hear you, maybe even see you, even when the television is turned off.
Vault 7.
People laughed at us.
Yep.
Conspiracy theorists, and here it is. It's reality.
Yep.
It happened.
Tinfoil hats. You have people like Clapper testifying to Congress that no, they would never spy on Americans, and then you have Snowden exposing the lie. Now we have this latest WikiLeaks, and I understand that the 8,000 plus emails or pieces of information, mm-hmm. I should say they weren't all emails that were released, is but the tip of the iceberg.
That's what they say.
You know, so. I believe that Rand Paul is right. You know, there are a lot of people out there saying today, oh, yeah, but the CIA just absolutely wouldn't use that on private citizens. I'm sure we're going to find that indeed they have by the time WikiLeaks is done. And as Rand Paul said, that's it. America no longer trusts the government.
Trust is gone.
Not just your smart telephone, your Samsung TV, but your smartphone and many other devices. You know, in Gotcha, I covered a lot of the devices that we know exist and that are used for physical control. You know, We have the ability to take control of an automobile, a new automobile. And for all intent and purposes, you know, if it were appropriate to crash that automobile, well, then, you know, why not do that? And there is some concern that, you know, that may have been what happened to Hastings, and Michael Hastings, the award-winning journalist, when he died in his automobile under some really strange circumstances.
Strange, because he was ready. He was ready to unveil some huge stories about
government. That's right. And when you look at this, and of course, who ever heard of an automobile accident, suddenly the incident report going black?
Yeah.
Who ever heard of that?
Yeah.
And, you know, Mercedes came out and said it's not possible that that engine was catapulted from the automobile some 200 feet in the opposite direction of the momentum of the automobile.
And look at Princess Diana's crash.
Oh, that's right.
In a Mercedes.
That's right. So, you know, what you have, there's been for a great deal of time the ability to hack into our smart devices, to control those devices, to monitor our activities in or around those devices. So there's really nothing new in these new WikiLeaks, this so-called Vault 7, that we didn't know from a technological standpoint. We knew that this was available. Here's the real catch there, George. The CIA doesn't normally spend a lot of time on these kinds of tools and techniques. Who really does is the NSA.
Mm-hmm.
So what you see in the WikiLeaks information about the CIA is the tip of the iceberg as to what's really available for use by our government.
Well, now, what do they want, Eldon? That's the bottom line. What are they after?
Well, lots of things. Look, information is power. The bottom line is there are many theories. You know, you came back and you talked about how you forecast these televisions being.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Well, yeah, conspiracy theory, tinfoil hat. The problem with so many of these theories is that the tinfoil hat turns out not to be foil at all.
That's right.
So when we look at what do they want, what is the direction? Well, I think clearly part of the direction is division, because that gives rise to chaos, and that makes it easier for people to be managed. That may sound like it's you might expect the opposite out of it, but the fact of the matter is, when there is great division, the government, or great threat, I should say, the government gets greater power. We have a terrorist attack, a 9/11, and we have the Patriot Act. As the government gains more power, then we have less. You know, most people aren't aware that, you know, following the Patriot Act, some 7,000 people disappeared into Holman Square, which is this, you know, secret facility in Chicago. If you're arrested and hauled to Holman Square, you do not need to be charged. They can hold you indefinitely. You do not get an attorney. If someone discovers that you're there, they'll deny that you're there. They do not allow attorneys in. You know, how is that possible for for law enforcement to arrest over 7,000 people and they just disappear in this country?
I know, and worldwide, it's even more prevalent.
Well, that's also very true. But so what's the objective? What's the agenda? Well, I think there are people that believe there's a one-world government agenda here. And if that's the instance, we can expect that we're going to have a whole lot more chaos, because Trump doesn't seem to be plugged in to the folks that would be orchestrating that one-world government.
If anything, they're after him.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. So we can expect it to get worse before it ever gets better. You know, if it's not that, it is definitely a power struggle. And that power struggle has us as pawns. We're just kind of, you know, those folks that get to be the players while the power elite divide up the spoils.
In Gotcha, you kind of warn us about the mob mentality. Tell us about that.
Well, see, what happens in a mob, two things. First of all, the research shows us clearly that, in fact, there's one study that I remember stands out in my mind that was conducted where what you did is you took a large group of people. And this was a study conducted by Melvin Lerner. And he was following up on Stanley Milgram's obedience study. And Milgram, of course, is the one that had students deliver electric shock to Confederates who feigned pain, great pain. And as they turned the shock up, as Milgram commanded them to turn the shock up, they got into danger areas that they had been warned and in the beginning could, for all intent and purposes, kill the Confederate. And nevertheless, they were obedient, and they kept turning it up. Well, Lerner wanted to know, what's the mass effect of this? So what he did is he took large groups of students. His first study, it had over 70 female subjects in it, and he had them watch a Confederate receiving electrical shocks under a variety of different conditions. And, of course, the Confederate feigned the pain. But what happened is, opposed to these women finding it objectionable, it took very little time before they began to ridicule and derogate the victim. We have studies that have been followed up on the Genovese effect. Kitty Genovese was the woman that was attacked in New York. Many, many people witnessed this attack. The attack carried on for a substantial period of time, nearly an hour. She was raped and killed on the steps in front of an apartment building. The onlookers, not a single one of them, called law enforcement. Everyone assumed that someone else would do it.
They all thought,
yeah, we
yeah.
put people in a room. You know, large group, maybe 40 people, like in a classroom, and they're there on some pretense. Then we'll flood the room with a little bit of smoke, and we'll watch those 40 people, and they'll maybe notice the smoke, and then they'll look around and see that nobody is doing anything. The proctor is continuing to teach, ignoring the smoke, and so they'll just sit there. They follow that mob mentality, and it works the other way. You know, we stop thinking when we're in that group. You were talking about neurochemicals, neurotransmitters, during the break.
Yep.
You spoke particularly about dopamine. Oxytocin is a binding neurochemical. What happens with oxytocin in a group is that it begins to bathe the body. It's the love chemical. So when I have a large group that I'm participating with, I'm bonding with that group, and it doesn't matter what I'm doing. I could be in a lynch mob doing the very worst thing that you can imagine if I'm not in a mob, doing something I said I would never, ever, ever do. And this oxytocin is taking over my brain. I'm bonding. It's the right chemical. It feels like the right thing to do. And so the cortisol that initially hits me, the neurotransmitter, when I identify a threat, the group identifies the threat. That's the threat neurochemical. So on comes the cortisol. Then bonding with the group, on comes the oxytocin, and there I go. So the fact is, we know two things about mob mentality. The first one is, you're not going to think about what it is you're doing. You're going to be looking around at what everybody else is doing. And the second one is, you're going to participate with that group as opposed to oppose that group, if for no other reason than the neurochemicals you're being bathed with. But there are other reasons. There is the fear of rejection, the compliance principles, such as reciprocity, etc. So we are, as opposed to being morally bound to an action, we're actually psychologically implicated in what our action is. And understanding that, it becomes pretty easy to manipulate a crowd. I'm sure you've seen television movies or commercials where a lone horse person is moving maybe 15 or 20 head of horses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
That only happens because he understands who the leader of the herd is.
That's who he goes after.
That's how he controls the herd. Well, yeah. When you understand how people behave, you can control the herd just as easily.
Didn't the mob really want to get to Robert Kennedy, but they figured the way to do it was to get the head, and that was JFK, to shut down RFK?
You know, you and I have discussed this one before, and I totally agree with you. I do think that was a coup d'etat, how could it said, where John F. Kennedy is concerned. I do think that Robert Kennedy was taken out to eliminate the possibility of him exposing the forces that were behind John F. Kennedy.
Exactly. Hey, we're going to come back, Eldon. We're at the top of the hour already. I want to talk with you about trends as well. Radio Shack, for example, closing 200 stores. They're in serious trouble. I want to talk about trends and what's happening, how technology changes things.